That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, hello everyone. Happy Monday and welcome back to That Money Show here live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy, here to do one thing and one thing only, and that is to make you better with your money. It's a big promise, but it's a promise I stand by every single episode. So, what is going to be happening today? What do we do on That Money Show? I mean, you might be thinking it's something to do with money, and you'd be thinking correctly. Yeah, we love to discuss everything and anything to do with that topic, especially personal finance, the economy, you name it, we discuss it. And in particular, we start off every week by bringing in what's going on in the news. But not just what's going on in the news, what's going on in the relevant news, the stuff that actually affects the money in your pocket. And then, of course, we're going to be answering your money-related questions. We're going to be breaking down a bunch of stuff, and we always love to bring in a range of experts, famous faces, and interesting guests to share their own personal finance advice, stories, tips, tricks, and everything else like that. Because, I don't know, you're probably going to get bored from listening to me speaking at you all the time. So, shall we kick off straight into the show today with story number one, which is the economy blitz. We like to discuss what's going on in the news, and straight off the bat, we've got the pound. You know that thing that you use to spend all your money with? Well, it's fallen to the lowest, well, level that it currently is in over a year. Doesn't sound too great. That basically means the pound is getting weaker as a currency. And not just that, borrowing costs, that's the government, not you personally. I don't know your personal circumstances and how much money you borrow. Please try and borrow as little as possible or get into as little debt as possible. But borrowing costs from the government have soared. That doesn't mean the amount they're borrowing. It means the cost that it costs them to borrow. Let me explain. When the government borrows money, it's not free for them to borrow it. It's not like they just borrow a tenner, pay back a tenner whenever they want to. It comes the same way that you would borrow money with an interest rate. I mean, in their case, it's kind of called yields and stuff like that, but it's an interest rate which they have to pay back as a premium on top of any money they've borrowed. And we'll dive back into that in a second, but let's first discuss what's going on with the pound. So it is at its lowest level in over a year. And that is kind of against the dollar. So when you kind of compare the two currencies, one against the other, it's gone down. It's looking really, really, really weak at the moment. And kind of what are the reasons behind that? Well, probably one of the biggest reasons as to the weakening pound actually becomes from the strengthening dollar. You've got President Trump or President-elect Trump. I mean, he's still President Trump because he's been the president, but he's President-elect Trump coming into government in, what is it, less than 2 weeks now? Don't know how you feel about that. You can feel free to write in how you feel about that. But this isn't a politics show. I'm just telling you what is happening. It's a factual lay-by-lay. And with that, Trump has promised a mass kind of increase in tariffs. So the amount it's going to cost other countries to ship products and services into the US, and decreasing the level of tax within the US. And that makes kind of the US seem a bit like a stronger economy, and it makes everywhere else a little bit weaker. So that's kind of one thing. The other thing is that a lot of currencies have been starting to get a little bit weaker on top of that. So it's just kind of this macroeconomic global factor as well. And of course, it comes from things going on internally, which I'm going to discuss with you in a little bit. What does the actual day-to-day mean for you when the pound gets weaker? Not a lot specifically, because like you said, you probably are trading with people in pounds, you're probably shopping in local areas, all that kind of stuff. And if you're mixing with people who are interacting with the same level of currency, the damage that you're going to see in your day-to-day life isn't too much. When it comes to things like massive companies that have to pay employees across borders, they're the ones that are going to be hit very hard by the shift in currencies when it goes one way versus when it goes the other way. So for example, if an English company has to pay a lot of American wages right now, not so fun for them. If an American company has to pay a lot of English wages right now, brilliant. They're getting a great rate on the pound if they have to pay their employees in pounds. So that's a really important thing to know. The kind of word coming out of the Commons, the Treasury Minister Darren Jones saying there's no need for any emergency intervention right now, and markets are looking to continue in a functional and in an orderly way. So the kind of response to these levels of the pound falling to the lowest level in over a year and borrowing costs soaring, it's kind of expected and no one's really seeming too bothered about it. But I still think it's really important for you, the individual, to understand that this is happening and just to keep one eye on it. Let's take a quick look at what's going on with the borrowing costs and why they've gone up. So I don't know if you want to cast your minds back to Labour announcing their budget in October last year, 2024. Didn't go down so well. And one of the key things that was mentioned by our Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, was that she wanted to kind of spend more on day-to-day and she wouldn't borrow any money on day-to-day spending, okay? So she would look to raise all of the money that would go towards day-to-day spending from the government, from taxpayers. And we saw a hike in tax through national insurance and a few other different routes. But basically, it was the taxes on the businesses. And it's actually really interesting whether or not those taxes are going to actually impact businesses or if they're going to impact more consumers. But we'll get to that in a short minute. But essentially, like we said, that kind of happened. And for some reason, knock on effect, that has slowly started to trickle the interest rate in which the government is borrowing money at. Higher and higher and higher, okay? So it says the government's decision to let rip on borrowing means that their own tax rises will end up being swallowed up by the higher borrowing costs at no benefit to the British people. So this is quite a critical thing. This idea that the fact that the way that they're borrowing money, a lot of the tax rises that they're implementing is just going to go into paying off the interest on the money that they're borrowing because the amount that it costs them to borrow just keeps going up and up and up. So the big question is, I've given you a lot of context there. How does this actually affect you? Well, number one, you need to look at things like bonds. So bonds are basically IOUs from the government, which get traded on the free market. You can go and buy a government bond right now. Well, right now, the interest on a 10-year bond, so one that matures in 10 years, so you can hold it for 10 years until the government will pay it back and promise to pay it back, are at their highest. The interest rate on those are at the highest since 2008. And if you want to look at 30-year bonds, the interest on those are at their highest since 1998. So maybe this is a time when the bond market in the UK is really, really strong. And these are kind of very secure securities, not very secure securities, but quite secure items because the government are the ones promising to pay you back. And normally the government do pay back their bills. I'm not going to start going down that route or that rabbit hole. Absolute whatsoever. But another thing to note about all of this is the impact it has on things like inflation and on our economy. So inflation right now is at its highest rate in over 8 months, 2.6%. I know it doesn't sound a lot compared to everything else, but what we like to look at with inflation isn't the absolute amount, but the amount that it is varying by. So if it goes from 2 to 2.2%, for example, that's a 10% month-on-month rise in inflation. Something to keep an eye out. And secondly, the economy has shrunk for 2 months in a row. Remember when Rachel Reeves said that her budget was going to lead to growth, and a little bit more growth? Just going to leave it with What else is going on? So this is kind of going to be a very big discussion when it comes to everything in 2025. You're going to hear a lot of conversations around cost of living over the next 4 months. And in particular, Tesco are the subject of my story today. Well, I'm going to bring in Greggs actually a little bit later. But Tesco have said that their Christmas sales were massively dampened by budget tax rises. So I'm going to contextualize this as much as I can, but please do write in and ask questions about this if you have any. The government's budget basically put up the amount it costs to run a business. Now, for Tesco in particular, they have said that the rise in national insurance that they're going to have to pay for their 330,000 staff is £250 million a year. That is just national insurance, by the way. That has nothing to do with the increase in minimum wage rises, which also went up by quite a significant amount and is also going to increase and obviously increase costs to companies such as Tesco. I know you're probably crying your eyes out, woohoo, Tesco making their billions of pounds and having to pay an extra. It's significant. It's still a lot of money. Now, you would be naive to think that £250 million is going to be swallowed by a company like Tesco. That is a huge amount of money, okay? They have said openly that they will do their very best to keep prices low. If you would like to hear a translation of what that means prices are going to rise, okay? It's not like, don't listen to that and think to yourself, oh, they've said they're going to try their very best, so maybe everything will be okay. You're going to hear this from a lot of companies. We will be doing all we can to try and keep prices low. However, due to our increased costs, we're going to have to pass on a bit of this to our customer. So you are going to start to see these prices trickle up. And like you can think, Tesco's Christmas sales dampened. Their Christmas sales probably weren't as good of prices as you might think as they start to prepare for the increased costs to their business and start to pass this on. Now, this only comes into effect in April, but companies are already starting to up costs because of this. And they said they've already said here, the chief executive of Tesco said, there's no doubt that rising employer national insurance contributions and the increase of the minimum wage have impacted the cost of doing business in the UK for all industries and particularly for retailers. Translation, yet again, the cost of things is going up. Although they did also release a stat in this article that said 2.8 million bottles of Baileys were sold over the past 6 weeks. So it does sound like the increase in any of these prices hasn't affected any of our Christmas spirit. And I can admit that one of those bottles was me. Thank you very much, Tesco's. Thank you very much. I said I'd also speak about Greggs because we're going to start getting a lot of individual case studies of how different companies are reacting to this. And you'll be absolutely flabbergasted to hear, and I don't think I've used the word flabbergasted in my entire life, but it feels relevant to this, that the price of the sausage roll has been hiked by 5p. £1.30, the new price. Remember 2 years ago when that used to cost, well, 3 years ago when it used to cost £1? Yeah, it's £1.30 now. They said that this increase, this 4% price increase, is because of the 6.1% pay rise they gave to all of their employees this month, and has actually nothing to do with the rises coming to the costs in their business, which are going to be quite minimal come April. So companies are using different reasons, but overall, prices tick up naturally. I feel like it's just something that we are going to get used to. I think the word new normal, which is a horrible thing to say because it's like the new normal is just everything's expensive. It's more like we need to just start readjusting our budgets to the price things cost. Things aren't going to be going down anytime soon. Let's just all hope and pray that things slow down at the rate that they're currently going. And yeah, I think there's a quote here from one woman. If Greg's sausage rolls go over £1.50, I will stop buying them. Susan, you stick with that. You hold to that. I can see you never buying a sausage roll again come 2027. Anyway, on that note, stick around because after this, I'm going to be joined by Alison Gray, the author of The Freelance Bible.
Fubar Radio. That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
What's kind of that one golden thing that you like to share with people who are trying to start a business?
That's a really easy one because I have a mantra which, you know, I say to young people all the time, and they really get it when I say it. And it goes like, don't undermine who you are by comparing yourself with someone else. It's because we are all different. Why each of us is special.
Politics Uncensored.
I felt like it was a little bit, they wanted to go viral. They wanted the clip to end up on socials and be able to go viral, and there was nothing substantive on it. So to be honest, it kind of pissed me off because I thought it was a throwaway comment made for social media as opposed to actually giving voters information they need when they enter the voting booth.
Totally agree. And I also found the whole, I think he said something about Keir Starmer's strings being pulled by senior members of the Labour Party. I found that slightly conspiratorial.
All areas. What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
There's a few girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You wanna go there?
Yeah, we're going there. Access all areas, mate.
What the Hell with Gabby Allen.
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah, strong.
No, you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be like. They see like the gym and the muscles and the tattoos and they think I'm going to be like this, like serious, like fuckboy, like lad. You know what I mean? And then they meet me and I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey. You know what I mean?
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
Girls got to choose which guy to bring, or
yeah,
was it?
Yeah.
And they went away from all of the other islanders, and that's where Joey and Grace were hooking up mad. And I've seen the headlines the next day. Apparently, producers had to really cut out
I
loads
saw
of
that,
their
yeah.
saucy antics.
You reckon the train was going in the tunnel?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There was no train strike that night.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Have you had any failures with your money?
Spent money on a designer handbag and literally that designer went
got cancelled maybe like a week or two after, so it's in my house and I've never worn it out.
That's really sad, but that could be like a unique masterpiece, right? That is one of a kind. They don't make it anymore, so you can...
Oh, no, they still make it, but I just don't... Maybe the time of cancellation is probably past now, but at that time, I remember what I just bought it. I said to my sister, I was like, can I wear this out? She's like, Ola, how are you? No.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel Nussbaum, and I am joined now on the show by Alison Grade, the author of the Freelance Bible. Alison, welcome to That Money Show. How are you doing today?
Hey, Gabriel, I'm great. So pleased to be here.
Yeah, very excited to have you on because I think that people are going to find this a really interesting conversation, this idea of a freelancer. I think that there's a lot of studies and news coming out right now about permanent job vacancies shrinking, companies cutting down, potentially a lot of, I suppose, dominoes being pushed off the back of the budget that we had in the autumn of last year, where companies are going to struggle to, you know, maintain such high costs and minimum wages, etc., etc. So shall we dive into the world of freelancing together?
I love diving into the world of freelancing. So yes, absolutely.
I would hope so. The Freelance Bible behind you kind of gives that away. So I suppose, from your analysis, what's going on? Why are we kind of shifting away in the, from the permanent job into a world where freelance is becoming more and more necessary?
So I think there's lots of different things, a perfect storm of things coming together, if you like. Probably a lot of it starts with COVID. I dread to go back to those times, but you know, a lot of companies found that they were carrying overhead that they couldn't use and things like that. And so the idea of having a more agile workforce to do what you wanted to do in a more project-based way definitely started to come through on that. I mean, I do look at the lens, I will say, through creative and screen industries. That's how the lens I look at the world through. So, and that has always been a very, very freelance industry. But I think companies are wising up to, do we just need to carry a load of people in case work comes in? Or actually, who do we need to do this particular bit and kind of package, put work packages together, right? We need to achieve this by this date. What team do we need? What skills do we need? And from an individual's perspective, it used to seem really stable to go, oh, I've got a permanent job, that's fantastic, you know, a job for life. But actually, if that company gets into trouble, you're all your eggs are in that basket. Whereas as a freelancer, you've probably got half a dozen clients. So if one of them doesn't have quite so much work, you're actually spreading the risk. So I think there's some interesting things. And like you say, with the budget, the rise in national insurance has really hit hard. And I think people are thinking, what do we need? When do we need it? How can we maintain the lowest cost base? And it's not that freelancers are cheaper, but you pull them in when you need them.
Yeah.
So you can manage, as a business owner, you can manage your cash flow much better.
Absolutely. Businesses seem to just be getting really lean at the moment, don't they? They are really being savvy over every single penny of cost, regardless of the size. I was just speaking about an article about Tesco's national insurance bill going up by £250 million when the changes come into effect. And that might seem insignificant to a company that makes billions, but it's not. And they will start to change the way and the dynamics that their company looks like. But I would love to discuss and have this conversation about going freelance from a really positive angle, because I think people are a bit too doom and gloom at the moment. So, let's start with the mental hurdle. Someone who's maybe on the edge, they're considering that shift into freelance work. How can people get over that mental hurdle and look at freelance as a potential rather than as being forced into it?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. So I think early in my career, people say, what would you do? And I'd sort of apologize and cough embarrassedly and say, I'm a freelancer. But I think those days are gone. It used to be, oh, you can't get a permanent job, therefore you go freelance for a bit until the right thing comes along. I think those days are over. Freelancing is such a positive step. It is about taking control of your career, working with the clients. You know, to a certain extent, you choose your clients. You go looking for work, you decide who you want to write to or get in touch with. So you're in charge of who you want to work with. You organize your own time. You organize your own hours. Yeah. You're your own boss. Like, if you don't want to work with somebody, you don't like that project, you can say no. Well, actions have consequences, but you can make that decision. If the boss, otherwise your boss just has to hand you work. So I think it's a really positive and empowering place to be. And I think particularly young people who want to be in charge of their destiny, you know, it's not, you don't have to do the Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. You can get up at 6, do a couple of hours, then you can go to the gym when every other person is in the office, having to sit at their desk, and like organize your time that way. So for me, I find it really liberating, really empowering. I like the independence. I like the autonomy. I like that responsibility. But yes, there is anxiety. And the thing is, you're not going to get the regular paycheck. Yeah, you're not going to get the regular paycheck. So you absolutely have to think about, how much does my life cost me to live? What does that look like? And I'll look at that over a year and go, okay, so that's what I need over a year. How am I going to achieve that?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I'm personally self-employed, and people often ask me, so like, what's your monthly salary? And I go, I don't really know. I can tell you kind of annually what I'm aiming to achieve or what I achieved last year. But it's, I suppose it's this different mindset. Like you said, you've got to shift into it. And it's a bit about, you get comfortable with it just through time and experience. It is weird from going from salary. You know exactly what's coming in every single month, should you hopefully, you know, not lose your job, to a state where, you know, you might have a brilliant month where you make 3 times or 4 times as much as you might have made in your regular job. And some months it might be completely quiet and there might be zero. But it's a very hard one, I suppose, to explain to people that have never experienced or used to it in the past. So, I mean, let's take some things, I suppose, from your book, from the Bible, not the Bible you might be thinking about if you've just tuned in, but the freelance Bible. What are some of the best tools, resources, things that people can kind of get their teeth into, available to people that are freelancers, want to become freelancers, to, in particular, manage money in the best way? Because this is that money show, after all. We have to come at it from that angle.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the challenge is that the world's not really set up to manage us as freelancers. The world's not really set up for that. I'm really sorry. I mean, that's why I wrote the book, is because there's loads of how to start your own company books and all of that. But actually, freelancers, we're often selling B2B services and things like that, you know, business to business services. And we're trading our time for money. So that there isn't that much out there. You know, what in terms of tools, you know, I think it's getting organized with the things that are out there. You know, I always run with 3 bank accounts. I've got my personal bank account, which is where I do my grocery shopping from, and the rent and the mortgage kind of gets paid from, and the gas bill and all of that. So that's my personal stuff. And then I'll have a business current account for all my freelancing activities and a business savings account. So, you know, if I'm getting paid to deliver some training, they'll pay me into my business current account, and I'll put any tax and national insurance money away into the savings account so I can't spend it by accident. And then I'll pay myself from my business current account into my personal account. So that sort of tool and strategy is really good. And then if you've got a debit card on your business current account, then you just, if you've got a business expense, so yesterday I met a client in London for the day. I'm based in Birmingham. I still met a client in London. So business debit card, get me a coffee at New Street Station. You know, business debit card, Oyster card, train fares. Those are all legitimate costs of me doing a day in London with a client. So then it's all straight coming through my business account. So I'm not at the end of the year, and I see so many creative freelancers using their personal account for all of their invoicing and everything. And then they're like, oh, was that trip to London with the kids, or was that to do something else? And so it just keeps it really clean and tidy. And then I'm sure you know, I mean, I'm sure you talk loads about like open banking and all of that, and you can link it to the softwares and all of those kind of things to just have a real transparency. And, you know, there's a number of fintechs out there looking at, you know, giving you a live feed on what your tax bill might be and things like that. But I think that can be a little bit disruptive because it doesn't have the full picture. It's only kind of what's gone through. So it can be helpful in some ways. But I know other people, it frightens them because like maybe all their expenses haven't come through, or suddenly they think they haven't got a large tax bill, but someone's about to pay them on the, you know, the 29th of March, and it just changes everything. So, you know, there's caveats around it. But sadly, I think financial literacy, so it's great to be on your show. It's such an important topic. And we're really developing a tool at the moment for freelancers to be able to kind of help them understand what you need to live on. Because if you don't know what you need to live on, you don't know if your freelance career is viable. Yeah.
I think these are all really good. And I think what I'm starting to hear is a lot of parallels between being good with money as a freelancer and being good with money generally. The idea of splitting things up and keeping things nice and organized from the start, because it's so much easier being organized up front than trying to figure everything out at the other end. As a freelancer, you have to deal with, you know, your self-assessments and your tax bills. And like you mentioned, if you're kind of doing things as a business, there might be a level of corporate tax if you've set yourself up as an LTD as a freelancer and all that kind of stuff. So it is really important. I love that you mentioned about business bank account, business savings account as well, so you can keep money separate. One of the first things I learned when I left my job was put aside anything that is going towards tax straight away, because there are so many people that just spend and mush everything into one pot. They might think, you know, I've got that business bank account, which means that everything go in that and it's all fair game. And then the tax bill comes at the end of the year and they need to think to themselves, oh, I actually spent all of my whatever X tax money. And that is really, really dangerous. And that is also, especially if you're paying yourself, you know, you have to pay yourself assessment at the end of the year as well. So there are so many different accounts now that even within one bank account allow you to split your money into pots and different things and sections and segments. And I would recommend speaking to a qualified accountant or someone that really understands the kind of taxes that you are going to have to cover, and getting a rough number, but then going a little bit more conservative and putting that money aside. It's always nicer to give yourself a bonus at the end of the year from your tax rather than having to dig into your money to pay off some tax. Does that make sense? Hopefully, I think.
Oh, completely. Yeah, just please, please don't spend the tax money. It will come and bite you on your bottom. And it's absolutely the way to go, you know.
Yeah. So one thing that you did mention was about financial literacy and kind of understanding how much your life costs so that you can be a sensible freelancer. Because sometimes, you know, you can't just have fun the whole time with work. You need to do the job that pays the bills because you need to get that kind of stuff over the line. So can you kind of share anything that you, how you go about processes? Is it once a year? Is it every quarter? To understand what money's coming in, what money you need to kind of fundamentally get into the business, kind of at like a threshold level before you kind of move to another threshold level to kind of what is above and beyond that. And then I suppose within that, how you are looking after yourself from a, you know, if I have a bad few months, how am I going to pay the bills? How am I going to pay the mortgage and all that kind of stuff?
So I think there's sort of, it's like you said about getting your bank accounts lined up at the beginning. I think if you're considering freelancing, whether you're in a permanent job or leaving education, whatever stage you're at, you need to take a long, hard look and go, okay, what do I need to live the life that I want to lead? This isn't about, I'm going to be the most frugal person ever. I'm only ever going to eat baked beans on toast. I'm never going to buy a Starbucks coffee or anything like that again. A Red Bull, you name it, you know, none of those, sorry, loads of brand name stuff. But you know, it's not that. It's about, because those things make us happy. So, you know, we want to be a happy, sustainable freelancer. We're doing this because this is the career we want. So what is my rent? What is my mortgage? What are my gas, electricity? What am I paying Netflix, iPlayer, that, you know, what am I paying for my mobile? What am I paying for my broadband? All of those traditional household things, which are probably coming out on direct debit. That's straightforward to look at. But then actually, what do I spend on groceries? How many times do I buy a coffee? How do I go to the cinema? Do I buy computer games? Like, do I buy makeup? All of these, like, what do I spend on myself? Do I plan to go on holiday this year? What am I going to put in the kitty for that? What, like, do I have a pet? Do I have kids? Do I have, like, what do I need to spend my money on? How much does it cost to get me out and about to go out and see my mates and do that kind of stuff? So really drilling down into that. And that's the piece that we're trying to put together to go, okay, so this is what you need to earn after you've paid taxes. Because if I don't know what I need to earn after I've paid taxes, then I don't know whether I can make my freelance career work. Yes. So if I'm completely self-employed, I'm going to be invoicing clients with tax and national insurance. And then I give the government the tax and national insurance and whatever's left is for me. But we're sort of starting from the other end. So what is the whatever's left need to look like? Right. And then HMRC has got this really cracking little tool on their website called the Ready Reckoner. Okay. And you put in, I need £1,000 a month after tax. And it tells you what it would be, the tax and the national insurance would be on top. So you can then go, okay, so if I need £1,000 a month, then I can work out what the gross is that I would need to invoice all of my clients across the year in order to end up with that £12,000 after tax, for argument's sake. So until you can do that and you know what that looks like, then that gives you like your baseline of, okay, this is what I need to charge clients. And then you go, oh, well, what am I going to do as a freelancer? Do I have an idea of my daily rate? How much work am I going to do? And then we then build in some tools to go, okay, how do you have an idea of your daily rate? Yes or no? Okay, yes, put it in. We can work out like how much work you need to do. Is that viable? Or
yes.
If you don't, then pick some rates and see, well, does that look viable?
I like
but
it.
All the way through, I'm kind of going, well, you're not going to get paid 52 weeks a year or 48 weeks a year. I'm going to work on like 24 to 30 weeks a year, ideally like a 24-week year of
Absolutely.
Being paid.
It's so all then a, it's I like starting the from the bottom up, basically. It's flipping an entire mindset from coming in and working in reverse engineering. That is essentially what it is. Alison, thank you so much for your time. I'm so excited to check out that tool by HMRC in particular, because I'd never heard of it. It sounds really exciting. And I guess people can check out the Freelance Bible for more.
Absolutely, alisongray.com.
There we go. Thank you so much, Alison.
Cheers.
Well, there you go. If you are a freelancer, we have just absolutely thrown an absolute ton at you when it comes to managing everything that you do in the best financial way. Now, I've got a quick tip for you this week. I love to give you a money tip every single week. And this is getting yourself in the best state possible in January for the year ahead with your money. And I want to ask you to actually check a few things. We're going to play a bit of a bingo card. If you haven't checked these so far, write them down and check them by the end of January. Check number one. Your savings rate. How much interest are you getting paid on the savings that you have put away? And then type in what are the best rates on the market right now. If you are not getting the best rate, please move. You do not need to be loyal. Okay. Number two, your pension. Can you afford to put more towards your pension? And are you maxing out any match scheme from your employer? Remember, it's a minimum of you put in five, they put in three. Please check that right now. Your ISA allowance. You have a £20,000 ISA allowance across all different ISAs per tax year. If you haven't maxed it out and you're able to, please consider it before it runs out in April. Bank provider, are you happy with who you use as your current account? If not, please switch up. You do not need to be loyal to any bank in particular. Get the one that is best for you. And lastly, please go and check your spending over the past 3 months. Check out those subscriptions that are coming out that you are not using anymore. Check out which categories you are spending on far too much. There are so many different apps, Snoop, Emma, Money Dashboard, that will do this for you with AI on an app. For free, put in your banks, check out your spending, reorganize which categories money is going towards, and those are the five. Well, how many of you completed? Do ping us on At That Money Show on Instagram. Let me know how many of the bingo cards you have done, and stick around, because straight off this, I'm going to be joined by Rossamy Merriman Johnson, aka Mr. Money Jar, a financial educator and advisor.
FUBAR Radio. That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
What's kind of that one golden thing that you like to share with people who are trying to start a business?
That's a really easy one, because I have a mantra which, you know, I say to young people all the time, and they really get it when I say it. And it goes like, don't undermine who you are by comparing yourself with someone else. It's because we are all different. Why each of us is special.
Politics Uncensored.
I felt like it was a little bit, they wanted to go viral. They wanted the clip to end up on socials and be able to go viral, and there was nothing substantive on it. So to be honest, it kind of pissed me off, because I thought it was a throwaway comment made for social media, as opposed to actually giving voters information they need when they enter the voting booth.
Totally agree. And I also found the whole, I think he said something about Keir Starmer's strings being pulled by senior members of the Labour Party. I found that slightly conspiratorial.
All areas.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing alright. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
There's a few girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You go there?
Yeah, we're going there. Access all areas, mate.
What the Hell with Gabby Allen.
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah. strong.
No, that's, you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be. Like, they see, like, the gym and the muscles and the tattoos, and they think I'm going to be, like, this, like, serious, like, fuckboy, like, lad. You know what I mean? And then they meet me, and I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
Girls got to choose which guy to bring, or
yeah,
was it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they went away from all of the other islanders, and that's where Joey and Grace were hooking up mad. And I've seen the headlines the next day. Apparently, producers had to really cut out loads of their saucy antics.
You reckon the train was going in the tunnel?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There was no train strike that night.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Have you had any failures with your money?
Spent money on a designer handbag and literally that designer got cancelled maybe like a week or two after, so it's in my house and I've never worn it out.
That's really sad, but that could be like a unique masterpiece, right? That is one of a kind. They don't make it anymore, so you can...
No, they still make it, but I just don't... maybe the time of cancellation is probably past now, but at that time, I remember I just bought it. I said to my sister, I was like, can I wear this out? She's like, Ola, how are you? No.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show live on FUBAR Radio with me, Gabriel Nussbaum. And I am joined by one of my favourite guests that we've had on the show before. It's Mr. Rotimi Merriman Johnson, a.k.a. Mr. Money Jar. Mr. Money Jar's like, honestly, what a name. Genius. Well done for getting that one in early. How you doing, fella? How are things? Happy New Year.
Very good, Gabriel. Happy New Year to you. You have a good Christmas and holiday break.
Absolutely lovely. I think we're allowed to ask that until February 15th. That's my cut-off day for saying Happy New Year. I'm pushing it with every like interview or person that I speak to. I'm just like, just keep going. Let's keep things happy, right?
Yeah.
So we have brought you on today to talk about a really interesting angle on money, because I haven't actually said it out loud, declaring 2025 the year of financial transparency for the UK. It is the year where people are going to get comfortable with the uncomfortable. So let me push that to you straight away. I mean, you talk about it on the internet, but have you always found it easy to talk about this topic?
Money?
Money.
Yeah, it's a great question. I have always been quite open about it. I think I get that from how I was brought up and my family. But what I found tricky was talking about it to other people. So that's more what I've had to learn how to do, how to have money conversations with other people in a way that's comfortable for them. And that's something that I'm getting better at all the time.
Yeah, of course, because you have to be mindful that just because you're comfortable with talking about money doesn't mean that there's an easy way to address it to someone else, especially when you don't know the way that they position. And we do live in a very taboo country where the topic of money isn't one that is more commonly discussed. But in particular, I want to kind of take a look at it from three different angles this year and kind of help people learn ways to positively bring up this topic, to positively enable their finances this year. Are romantic relationships,
sure,
familiar or family relationships. And another one that's going to be a really interesting angle is just with your mates and friends and friendship groups and all that kind of angle. So should we kick off with partners, romantic relationships, girlfriends, boyfriends, whatever they are, wives, husbands, et cetera, et cetera? How do you start that conversation off? Let's say you're in a position where you've been with someone for a few years, quite a lot of time. Obviously, having open financial conversations positively impacts finances because you're on the same page and you understand where everything's coming from. But getting to that point in the first place is quite difficult. So is there a clever or polite or comfortable way to entertain this conversation?
I think when it comes to relationships, talking about money openly and honestly as early as possible is important. But as we've said, it's a very taboo topic. So what I recommend people to do is to use the things they would normally do as a couple and use those as touch points to have those financial conversations. So that's one of the interesting things about money, which is that even though it is a taboo topic, it cuts across nearly every aspect of our life. So you're going to be going on dates. You're going to be going out to eat, possibly booking holidays together. And then further down the line, maybe moving in with each other, buying groceries. Use those moments as a couple to talk to each other honestly about money, how you feel about it now, how you used money in those situations growing up, and just use those to start natural conversations. I remember in previous relationships, you know, just seeing whether my partner wanted to pay, like wanted to split the bill, expected me to pay, expected themselves to pay. That's great. And you can find out very early on whether you're compatible or not in that way.
I like that. I mean, the question of who pays on the first date, right? I feel like to a lot of people, they think it's just a throwaway question, a bit of entertainment. But I suppose from people that talk about finance all the time, it's a really interesting topic because it probably says a lot about the way that you will treat finances moving forward within a relationship. Yeah. And not to say that if they get it wrong on the first date, by the way, it's game over. Very important to say that.
The key point is that these conversations are judgment-free. Because if you go out with someone, you know, you've met them at a certain point in their life, but they have a whole history and backstory to them that you weren't privy to. And that's one of the exciting things about meeting someone, is actually about finding out about their context and who they are as a person. And if you're compatible, great. If you're not, then it's neither of your fault. That's just how it is.
Brilliant. Okay, so let's say we've crossed that taboo point where we're ready. We're ready to sit down and really talk about money. Do you have any good tips for getting on the same financial page with your partner? Because like you might have mentioned, they might have a different history, a different idea for their goals, for their future, their financial priorities, habits, all that kind of stuff. So what are kind of some key ways to put yourself on the same page, even if you are different people?
Okay. So I think first things first, definitely not a good idea to withhold any debts from your partner. So do try and speak to them about that as early as possible and as honestly as possible. I'm thinking slightly further down the line now to when you know each other, you know each other well, you're starting to do a few more things jointly. I'm actually a great fan of using a shared account. So that can be just a regular bank account or a joint bank account, and having a list of things that you do together jointly that you spend from that account from. So every month you can top that account up with money. And then the things that you do jointly, whether that's groceries, buying things around the house, holidays, you can spend from that account specifically. And you can also plan for your financial goals and the things that you'd like to do from that account as well. And, you know, often it's the case that when you're in relationships with people, there might be earnings disparities between the two of you. Someone might earn slightly less than the other. When you top that account up, it doesn't have to be the same amount of money from both of you. You can agree percentages that you'd like to put in. And I like percentages, actually, because they scale no matter how much or how little you earn. 40%, you know, a 60-40 split is always a 60-40 split.
Yeah, I think that's really strong. I think one thing that I've enacted in my own personal relationship, which has been brilliant, is this idea of we do have a joint account, all of our money goes in, but then we each get allocated fund money, which is private money. We both get the same amount. And again, this can be percentage, this can be the same amount. It's up to you and your own position. But we both get sent money and I could literally put that £200 on the lottery. And that's up to me. If I want to do that every, or £300 or whatever it is, but whatever the amount is, I can put it on the lottery. I could, you know, give it away to charity. I could spend it all on Greg's sausage rolls, which I was talking about roughly half an hour ago. The whole point is it's like free money within a relationship that has zero judgment attached to it. And I think that's a really important one from a mindset to allow you to, you know, work together towards financial goals, but still exercise financial independence.
Yeah, and that I'm really happy you mentioned that financial dependence piece, because why are we talking about the shared account or the joint account in addition to that, and you're topping it up rather than just having one, just having the shared account. It's very important that you keep your own bank account as well as having a shared one, because it's important for people to have their own money as well. Like, rather than just put, particularly when it comes to joint accounts, because joint accounts are a specific type of financial product that both of you have your names in. You know, opens up partners in the worst cases to things like economic abuse and stuff, where people have rights to all the money that's inside the joint account, and that money can be taken away from you. So I think it's very important in a relationship that you have your own money, you have couple money, and then, as is the case in your relationship, you have fund money as well that you can use how you like. But look, We call it personal finance for a reason. It definitely is personal. Every couple's gonna work out different ways to have conversations about money, to plan jointly, to spend jointly. But these are just some general principles that I found has worked, not just for myself, but other couples that I know. And it's part of the fun of being with someone, working all of these things out.
It is. Look at it as a fun thing, not a stressful thing. All right, let's talk about mates now, because I suppose this is a different element. It's this idea that, you know, you might have had a friendship group that you've grown up with through school, but that means that 5, 10, 15 years down the line, things might look very different for all of you financially. Of course, the most obvious case might be you might have a friend that's earning twice as much as you, three times as much as you. And yet, the lad's holiday, they're still pushing for in the group chat. And you're sitting there thinking, do you know what? They can definitely afford it, but I can't. But like, these are my friends, so I just have to go. That's part of it. Or it might be, you know, we regularly go out for a meal once a month and someone picks a restaurant that you just can't afford. So is it, like, how do you even bring that up? Because I feel like so many people will just go with the flow and understand that, like, that's their friendship group now. They just have to get by and get on with it and figure out the money side afterwards.
Yeah. If you'd asked me that, it's a great question. If you'd asked me that money prior to the pandemic, then I would have found it slightly trickier to answer because, that was happening a lot where you would be invited to stuff like holidays and be expected to just pay up or you'd go out for a meal, order like a tap water and a salad, and then all of a sudden you're splitting the meal with everyone else.
Oh, don't even started on that. They'll split the bill when you're like, I've just bought a Coke, mate.
Yeah. But actually, what I found in my experience is that since the pandemic, and actually the cost of living crisis and just the general economic period that we're in, people are a lot more sensitive. And actually, I think because a lot of the conversations are happening about money online on social media, people are a lot more open to talking about their money and to understanding about different people's financial situations. I thought it was wonderful, for example, that loud budgeting was trending last year. And I see that very much as a social media phenomenon. So I would say exactly that. Let people know what your situation is. And my hunch is that given the times that we're now living in, people will be understanding if you say, do you know what? I would love to come on the lad's holiday, but actually I'm saving for a house deposit, or I'd love to come out to the restaurant with you, but things are a bit tight at the moment. Like, it's January, spent on Christmas, got paid early in January, got paid early in December, going to be paid late in January, have spent money on Christmas presents. So if I come to the restaurant, I'm just going to get my bit of the bill or something. It's just about having those comfortable conversations.
Yeah.
I'll be very honest with you. If you're going out with proper friends, they're going to understand. They're not going to shame you for
that. That's the line. That's the line. If they are proper mates, they can handle that conversation. And that should strengthen relationships, not weaken them in any way, shape, or form. I want to ask you just one more question, if that's okay. I think it might be something particularly important to listeners of this show, and you might have experienced this. But if you listen to a show like this, you're probably decent with money. If you're interested in this topic and you're actively trying to get better with it, you might then see friends, family that require a little bit of support, financial advice, something that you've learned that you would love to pass on to them. How do you go about sharing that advice, sharing that support without being condescending or overstepping a boundary when you think that someone needs it?
Do you know what? I want to give a practical tip that everyone can do that is low friction and that I think works. And is slightly biased as well. send them financial content that you like.
Okay.
Like, I have a group of friends now that will just send memes to each other. Just if you have a favorite content creator, if you see an article that you like, send them the link, send them the video, and just ask them, what do you think? And then that can begin a conversation around it. I think as human beings, psychologically, we're a bit weird in the sense that we don't like to be told what to do, like, directly. We like to feel like we've made the decision or we've arrived at the conclusion.
And this is a really clever way.
I find that sending something that someone else has said gives them the opportunity to feel smart and to feel like they've come to the conclusion And obviously, don't send them this interview because that's what I
love it.
But if I wanted to say something to someone, I'd probably send them a piece of content about it or an article and then see what they had to say.
That's a really mature way. Rotimi, Timmy, thank you so much for joining us yet again on That Money Show for some invaluable advice.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Cheers. Happy New Year, mate. Well, there you go. Some really good ways to open up financial transparency. I said 2025, the year of financial transparency. And now you know how you're going to go about it. Okay, time for audience questions. Every week you guys DM us on Instagram at That Money Show. That's the handle, by the way, with your questions. And we answer them live on the show. So please keep asking and I will keep answering. And this is from Frankie who said, what is the difference between saving through a stocks and shares ISA and buying shares on an app like Trading212? Okay, I'm going to actually take a reset. I thought of an analogy to help answer this question. So if you've ever been confused about concepts like S&P 500, stocks and shares ISA, general investing, Trading 212, Vanguard, this is going to explain it so clearly for you. So let's talk about shopping, groceries, okay? What do you do when you want to go buy some groceries? You need to pick your shopping, your supermarket. Is it going to be Tesco's, Asda's, Waitrose? You pick the one that's right for you. That is the platform you invest on, okay? That is your Trading 212, your Vanguard, your Hargreaves Lansdown, the shopping center, the shop, okay? You go into the shop, but to buy something, you need to hold the products in it, right? So we're going to need either a basket or a shopping trolley, okay? Let's think of the shopping trolley as a general or normal investing account. That's standard. Everyone's pushing that around. But your basket's quite lean, and that's a stocks and shares ISA. They both can hold the exact same things. Let's imagine they're the same size. But one is tax efficient, and that is the stocks and shares ISA. You don't pay tax on the earnings that you make. And lastly, you need to fill it with products. You need to actually buy your investments. You need to buy the stuff, the fruit, the vegetable in the shopping, in the supermarket. So you want to fill it with bananas and apples and, I don't know, pears. And those are the companies, right? Those are stocks from companies. So that could be Apple or Tesla or Microsoft or, I don't know, BP. Whatever it is, that's the individual companies. But... instead of buying individual companies, you can do things called buying funds, which is buying baskets that could consist of an entire industry worth of companies. Or you can buy something called, for example, the S&P 500, the biggest 500 companies in the US. And that would be like buying a fruit salad, okay? You're not just buying one fruit, you're buying it all mushed up into one. And that is the different layers of investing, okay? You're gonna need the platform, you need to have in the shop, you're gonna need the thing to hold it in, which is gonna be the account, general investing or stocks and shares ISA, and you're gonna need to actually put products in the basket, whether they're individual or grouped together, pre-packaged and all that kind of stuff. Hopefully that explains it all. And in this case, the stocks and shares ISA was your basket and Trading 212 was Tesco. Sound fun? That sounds pretty good. All right, next up, we've got a question. Why do saving accounts mature? Okay. This is a great question. So there are many things called easy access savings accounts. Easy access is exactly what it sounds like. You have easy access to it. Money can go in and out and in and out and in and out. And you will constantly be getting paid the interest rate depending on how much is in it, measured on a whatever basis. They'll tell you if it's daily or monthly, et cetera, et cetera. But there are a lot of accounts that offer you a set amount of interest but you have to lock that money away for a year, 6 months, 90 days, whatever it is, okay? 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, we were talking about earlier with some of the bonds and yields from the government. Now, those have to hit maturity. So you need to hold that for a fixed period of time until it so-called comes to an end. And that's what the word mature means. It means it's coming to an ending point where after 2 years, you get paid your interest rate, that money is unlocked and you have to then go, you'll get told by the account, hey, it's coming to an end of its period, it is maturing, and you now need to go and make a fresh decision with that money. Some people lock money away to secure the amount of interest they're getting because interest rates do vary on easy access accounts. It could be 5% today, but they might have to drop it to 4.75 tomorrow. But on a fixed account, whatever you put it in at, frozen for a year, will stay frozen until the point of maturity, which you've been promised on the way into that account. And the last question from Tasmin. Is crypto considered a legitimate investment opportunity? And if so, why isn't it regulated? Do you know what? I'm going to be really honest here. I dabble in crypto. For me, crypto makes up a tiny 1-2% of my entire portfolio. But this is personal level, of my level of education. I will never actually share or educate other people on it because I don't feel like I'm the best person to be put in that position. But who knows? Maybe we'll get a crypto expert on the show, thanks to that question, to answer the questions about why it's not regulated, is it legitimate, and the pros and cons of going into it. But it is a volatile asset, and always please do your own research and understand that your capital, any money you put away, is always at risk with any kind of investment. Anyway, that's all we've got time for today. Thank you to Rossamy and Alison for their joining us on the show today. And remember, DM us on Instagram at That Money Show with your questions. Do it now. Get in first for next week's show. You can listen to us on every podcasting platform out there. You pick. I like Spotify, but you pick. And you can download the FUBAR Radio app to listen to us live. I've been That Money Guy. This has been That Money Show. And together, we have made you better with money.